It wasn't so much like going into the forest to see the forest. It was more like seeing what was left of the forest when the wood kind of gets harvested. My name is Maybe Jayron Saderi. I am an artist. I am multidisciplinary. Mainly I'm a sculptor. Nowadays I'm mostly interested in ceramics, but I consider anything fair game. And I also work chiefly in illustrators' mediums when I'm not sculpting. And I'm based out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, where I've lived for over a decade. Nobody knows me.
Oh, oh, nobody feels me. I would bet that the stereotype is that if you say Iranian theater, people are going to think about something that happened back then and not something that happens now or has been happening.
My name is Ryan M. McKelvey. I'm a writer and live artist. I also collaboratively devise public projects with my artistic partner Zoya Sardashti at Home Soil.
In the question, what is the future of Iranian theater? I immediately am like, wait a minute, what is the future? Or when is the future? What does it look like? How is that? What is this thing? Who is Iranian? What's Iranian, right? And then what is this like theater, right? You know, what does that have to mean? And so those are some of the first things I think of, because for me, in my world, as I guess nowadays I would refer to myself as a live artist, so I make public performances, one-to-one performances, rituals, instigations, things like that, that have nothing to do with the theater, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, in a traditional, conventional mode, and certainly are nowhere near a stage or an auditorium. That I think a lot of people would be willing to groove with, like, oh, you hear this word theater, oh, maybe it could be loose, it could be free, right? I mean, there's a rich history around the world of theater happening outdoors or theater happening in the streets or in any number of places. So I was like trying to deconstruct, I guess, that question, what is the future of Iranian theater? I think of two Rezas, and I think of Reza Abdo and Reza Haddad. Reza Haddad, I saw a performance in 2010 in Seoul. And then Reza Abdo made work in America and left Iran when he was 16 years old. Studied in England, went back, and then came to America eventually. And as he was in his 20s to 30s, made work here. So, is his work Iranian? I mean, is he Iranian? I mean, I think it's important in considering what the future of any sort of archive of work is. Who's allowed access to that? Like the both of us as non-theater makers, are we somehow allowed access to a discussion about making theater?
How do you feel about
the label Iranian?
2.5 years or so ago, I decided that I wanted to make a deliberate move to extract identity from my work, or the identity that I felt was being imposed on me. So sort of lessen the likelihood of certain types of conversations about my identity. A lot of the stuff that I make now as opposed to before is like really minimal. You won't see the figure in it. Tends not to have letters or script. Doesn't really allude to anything Iranian or Iranian-ness. Or even things that kind of like are around like the perimeter of Iranian-ness that you could kind of like rope into and read into. So yes, what I'm getting at is that I think about this a lot, and it's something that's definitely evolved for me. When I first came here, I recall feeling like I'm a citizen of a nation state. I am an envoy, and I am coming here now to another nation state. And I am an immigrant, and I am a this, and I'm a that. And if there are questions, I'm willing to answer them. If anybody mispronounces, I'm willing to correct them. And I'm willing to sort of like be this kind of outpost, this like self-appointed envoy in a way. And that's really changed over the years. It's changed over the years because of geopolitics, because of personal growth, because of relationships, because of romance, because of language, so many things. One thing that's really encouraging for me that I've noticed just as time has gone on is that And I don't think it's just me. I think this has actually been sort of an evolution with social media and things like that, kind of maybe making more space for multiplicities or certain types of multiplicities. I think over time, that picture of who an Iranian is, you know, has really diversified in a way. Mm. And it's come to include not just, say, like, people who live, you know, within these borders, who are like Farsi speaking, who are like, and to the exclusion of other ethnic groups that live in Iran, who have all had this collective memory of the revolution and of the war, all have an opinion about Israel, and all do this and all do that. I think it's moved away a little bit, and now I think I see more acknowledgement of people who, not only Iranian immigrants who live in the U.S., but also those who live in Europe who get overlooked a lot, and especially certain parts of Europe, like Sweden and pretty much all over Scandinavia. Also, Iranian immigrants who live elsewhere, like Japan or China or Australia or Korea, of mm-hmm. whom there are many. I mean, to me, that's encouraging because on a selfish level, I feel like it makes more room for me personally. And
it's been a reoccurring word for me in 2016, troubling year, to say the least. This idea and concept of multiplicity, and not just in regards to my own subjective experience of my life, not just in regards to identity being multiplicitous, but our lives being multiple and made stronger or fuller or more dynamic. To be multiple, to be greater than one, to be greater than two, to be greater than three, and so on and so on. That simultaneity of being, like, that I can be Ryan artist, I can be Ryan American, I can be Ryan queer, I can be Ryan queer American artist, given a particular context or platform. I guess mm-hmm. that it really would change how that sort of comes into play. Mm-hmm. In thinking about Zoya's question, one thing that really strikes me is that when I hear American or English or Japanese or Korean, to say Iranian theater to me has a sort of like canonical, like, I don't know, like, oh, it must be like the great theater of Iran, you know? So right. So as a Westerner, as an American, I'm like, oh, well, are they going to talk about like, oh, Persian poetry and Persian performance, and is that what's going to happen? Like, if we talk about the English theater, do we mean Shakespeare, or do we mean what's going on right now in the West End? And I think for England, if you say the English theater, then yeah, maybe some people are going to think about what's going on in the West End. Mm-hmm. But I would bet that the stereotype is that if you say Iranian theater, people are going to think about something that happened back then and not something that happens now or has been happening. And I'm interested in that insistence on like a future and a now and a then. The little bit that I know, you know, having only been able to see one show of a play, an original production by an Iranian company with a full Iranian cast in Farsi, and it was wild. It was full of light. I mean, it was everything that your imagination can find to be possible, but in the theater, on the stage. Because the other Iranian theater maker that I know, Reza Abdo, though he made work in America, also had, in the late 80s, early 90s, very experimental, very raw, and challenging assumptions of identity. The multimedia-ness, the experimental-ness of the two works that I've seen speak to somehow a kind of multiplicity. That, like, there's just no one way to box us in. Yes, I might happen to be Iranian, but that doesn't mean that my work looks Iranian, whatever that might mean,
whatever
right?
It might mean, right.
Exactly. I mean, it's like...
That's major, huh?
That's major.
It really is.
To think of countries around the world, societies around the world that are multiple, your neighbors might not even share the same habits or customs or language or religion or anything as you. I think in a homogenous society, let's say, an ethnically homogenous, if we're going to use these words. If we talk about contemporary Korean theater, then maybe we can get at some sort of way of doing things, or how things are done, or a character, mm-hmm. an essence of what it might feel like. Can we really do that when we say American? Can we really do that when we say British? Why do people then assume that you can do that when you say Iranian?
It's a great question.
You know?
Yeah.
It's kind of messed up,
yeah.
really.
Yeah.
You know, I almost wanted to swear, but I guess we don't have to worry about censorship, do we? It's fucked up, isn't
For
it?
Once.
It's fucked up. For once, huh?
Yeah.
Do you remember any theater when you were growing up in Tehran?
I do remember a little bit of theater. Theater in Iran is by no means like a populist mode of art making, by any means. It may have been prior to the revolution, but I don't really have that experience because A, I wasn't born, and B, my family members were not avid consumers of theater by any means. So my experience comes from growing up in adolescence and teenagehood in Iran, and frankly, not really being even aware that there was theater happening. There were confines and limits placed on writers especially, but also actors, venues, who your cast can be comprised of,
mm-hmm.
what they can do on stage, and even the makeup of your audience. Is it going to be mixed? Because for a long time, it was highly contentious to have women mixed in the audience with men, and it was... So all these other sort of external things were informing what was happening with theater. And this is still the case now, but it used to be way more stringent in the early 90s. So to me, going to go see theater, it wasn't so much like going into the forest to see the forest. It was more like seeing what was left of the forest when the wood kind of gets harvested. So there was this assumption for me personally that if I was going to go see theater, I felt like I was just going to be seeing like this like hacked up corpus of what could have been. That actually informed a lot of my consumption of any sort of art in Iran right around that time. To me, it was just like, yes, I mean, this might be fine, or I may enjoy this just fine, but like there was always this like looming specter of what could have been if, say, the cast was allowed to do XYZ, or if the script might have called for singing or something by a female character, and if that's not possible on stage, then how do you mitigate that? And then what does the audience get to see? Without ever really even going to the theater, I had already sort of made up my mind that what I was seeing was not going to be an authentic experience. It was sort of inviting the censors into my experience. My experience with Iranian theater is the very traditional type, and it's the type that maybe even some Iranians of a certain generation, but scholars especially, may be most inclined to think of when they think of Iranian theater, which is like passion plays, which are very populist. And unlike these other plays that I'm talking about, the ones that, you know, like say like an adaptation of like an Albee or like a Shakespeare or whatever on stage, where you know it's going to be dissected and obscure so that it's a quote-unquote appropriate for stage, these plays are meant to be public. Epic scenes where the actors are like the prophet's family members, like his son-in-law or his grandsons or his granddaughter or whatever. Not only are they safe for consumption, safe for public consumption in Iran, but they're encouraged, you know, they're sanctioned. It may not go without saying, so I'll just like kind of open a parenthetical statement here that the division of like public and private in Iran is sort of its own species. It's very particular to like to societies within Iran, and it may not be familiar looking to a Western person if they were to see it. But public and private life are very separate. And so something that's sanctioned for view in public is going to have very defined characteristics to it. And these plays are sort of strict in that way. They always follow the same story. The story never changes. The costumery rarely changes. You might have a real horse or a fake horse. You might have fake blood, fake swords, armor. This like very, very particular kind of chainmail. When I think about it, it's funny. The way I'm describing it makes it sound kind of naive, and that's fucked up, but like I said, this is just oral tradition and it's passed on and the actors are always men. Like you kind of expect to see the same thing every single time,
mm-hmm.
you know, with very little variation. And so you also have these like publicly sanctioned ways of reacting to what you're seeing. So that was one kind. And then the second kind is maybe a little bit more rare and is more of like a storytelling tradition where you have these large painted scenes on these giant pieces of, I believe it's probably canvas. I can really describe it as like a cross between a painting, because they're painted, a proscenium, and then a PowerPoint presentation. And then like there are kind of points that you want to hit as you're going through it, and it may be linear, like the interlocutor or the storyteller who's like saying this with a lot of flourish, like going through and like pointing out these things, like this is so-and-so and this is the head of so-and-so who's being slain by this dude over here, and here's like the disembodied arm of this guy, and here's the horse of this person who is known to be really loyal, blah blah blah.
And where would those be?
In coffee houses. They're transportable, so you can roll them up.
Oh.
You can set them up and take them down. Again, made for public consumption. Granted, for coffee houses, so for the most part, male spaces, though that's also changed. And so these are my experience with theater as performed by Iranians.
Theater as performed by Iranians.
As performed and maybe written and mirrored by.
Give me one sense memory from Iran.
Fire.
Mm-hmm.
Fire is a really big one. But when I say that, I think like, oh, come to think of it, it's more like light. It's like fire and light. Fire is sort of an obvious one in a way, because it's just, it's like ritualistic. It shows up in certain parts of the year. It's like a Zoroastrian thing as well. So if I kind of dig deeper, it's mostly about light. So yeah, Iran to me is about light. When I was little, the lights would go out all the time. This is in the 80s. And it was in the early 90s, so it wasn't long after the Iran-Iraq War, and everybody was still recovering. And I'd argue that in some areas of Iran, like, they're not even halfway there, just recovering. But in Tehran, anyway, it was like, the light would go out all the time. And, you know, it sounds like so bucolic and so like, oh. But like, really, you're like sitting in your kitchen in this giant concrete jungle at the foot of a bunch of mountains. And you can smell smog because there's like 12 million people dwelling in there with you. And the lights are out and you're like sitting by candlelight. So light.
Light.
All the different types.
All the different types of light.